This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Skip Stewart, Vice President and Chief Improvement Officer at Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hi, guys. This is Dr. Shane Lyerly. I am a family medicine trained physician at NEA Baptist over in Jonesboro, part of our leadership team here, and I have utilized a lot of Dr. Beeson's material. I have completed his Practicing Excellence Patient Experience Program, Physician Coaching Program, and so I'm very honored to be able to be here and help out with this podcast.
Well, today we are so excited. You heard Shane talk to you about Dr. Beeson. We have Dr. Stephen Beeson from Practicing Excellence. Dr. Beeson, welcome. And if you would, tell us a little bit about yourself and about your organization, Practicing Excellence.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm just delighted to be here. I would characterize me as, first of all, my lens, worldview, and experience is very much emerging from the exam room. I see the world through a clinician's view and experience. I spent, 20 years managing a 2,200 patient panel with the Sharp Healthcare System and the Sharp Restelli Medical Group in particular. And the plan for my life was to see patients all day, every day to advance their wellness and to do what doctors do. And, you know, sometimes life takes radical pivots that we didn't anticipate or plan. And that certainly has happened with me with the founding of what we now refer to as Practicing Excellence. And for me, that journey really began, you know, around 2000, 2001, when I was appointed to a position in the Sharp Healthcare System to apply people development to help our organizational improvement. And we had struggled with things like patient experience and team engagement and talent attrition and market share. So we had an organizational dashboard that said, in this competitive region, we need to become better for our patients and better for our teams. And I got a phone call from our medical director and the chairman of our board to say, hey, Steve, do you want to be a leader of this endeavor to become better for patients and better for teams? In something that we refer to as the Sharp Experience as part of Sharp Healthcare. We're going to just transform the experience for patients and team members. And so really my life began to shift at that time. And my responsibility was to turn red boxes to green boxes in terms of patient experience and team engagement. And my task was, how do we develop people to allow them to manifest a better future state for patients and care teams? And I had no idea what I was doing out of the gate. One of the first stories I tell is, as I was tasked with help improve our patient experience through the application of people development and coaching of clinicians to become better, was I began to ask patients, you know, how do you define the best clinician that you've ever known? You know, what do we do exactly? And I interviewed about 50 patients throughout the course of a normal clinical day. I was just asking patients this question again and again. And I heard the same answers over and over and over again. I want a clinician who listens, who cares about me, who knows me, who includes me, that is accessible to me. And so I registered a list of, this is how patients define the best clinician ever. And then I began to dive into the literature to saying, what are the behaviors that actually manifest that sentiment where patients walk out and they say, I was heard, I was cared about, I'm in the know, I'm included in decisions, I'm a participant in care. And that registry of actions, I began to apply in my own practice. And what I found personally through the application of behaviors that created a transformed patient experience, I was able to register pretty transformative impact on how patients saw me. I was able to achieve the 99th percentile for a decade straight without working any harder. But the reason I ended up dedicating my life to people development is what it did for me and what it felt like to be the clinician that I've always aspired to be and to get feedback loops from the patient to say, man, you're the best. And sometimes I could diagnose and cure disease, but I felt like I was making impact and having this restorative human connection with each and every patient. And that pattern was replicated with all of my colleagues as we apply the application of simple behaviors to connect with patients. Patients would benefit, and and the clinician would benefit. And it became the next 10 years was, how do we coach and develop using simple evidence-based skills to allow clinicians and other care team members to better connect with patients, to better collaborate with each other, and then eventually widening the aperture to leadership skills. And how do we lead in a way that the people we lead say, I love coming to work and I'm willing to access my discretionary effort to help this place succeed by virtue of what my local leader does for me. And so 10 years of applying human development and realizing, number one, applying people development to allow people to raise their capacity to create results was transformative. We went from bottom decile to top decile in finance, in quality, in patient experience, in engagement, in turnover, all the cultural proxies we were able to achieve. And the principal mechanism was developing our teams to apply behaviors to allow us to connect with patients, collaborate with each other, and to lead effectively. And then I was sitting in a Starbucks around 2012 saying, how do we tap this? Because it's really hard to scale, it's hard to sustain, and it was a very analog lift in applying people development across a large, complex organization. And then I thought to myself, how do we use technology to power mastery, to power continuous improvement? Because learning is not an episode or a class. It is a continuous process, always, every day, applying something to become better at our craft. And so the idea of using technology to apply micro-learning on evidence-based skills to connect with patients, collaborate with each other, and to lead effectively eventually became practicing excellence, which is what I spend 150% of my life on right now. So I founded a company and now have lots of employees and tens of thousands of physicians and APPs and staff and leaders and even nurses, of trying to use people development to raise people's capacity to create results, to make healthcare better for patients and teams. So that's the kind of sort of pseudo long, short version of my life today. So.
Oh, that's great, Dr. Beeson. Thank you so much for being here with us today on the podcast. You know, recently we had the opportunity to have you here at NEA Baptist and give a presentation on well-being to our advanced practice providers and our physicians here. I was so grateful to be able to be a part of that, had opportunity to spend some time with you and visit with you then. And get to know you a little bit better. But I have to say, and I think most of our physicians and APPs out there know that we have the Practicing Excellence app available. But I have to say, since I've been utilizing that and since I've gone through some of your programs, I can't tell you how big of an effect that has actually had on my life and on my practice. It's made such a huge difference for me. And so I would just like to convey that to our other docs and APPs out there that it's very helpful and it makes a big difference. Could you tell us a little bit about the app and the format that you use and the micro learning involved in that?
Yeah. And, you know, I think, Shane, you hit the nail on the head. The purpose of practicing excellence is not to improve a patient experience score or even engagement score. That is a consequence. The real reason that we developed this is to allow clinicians to become the kind of clinicians they always thought they were going to be. And every clinician, when we do a coaching improvement process, the first question is, tell me who you want to be in this life. And I don't know any clinician that says, well, I want to be exhausted, cynical, and depersonalized. I mean, which is the triad of burnout, which is 60%+ of clinicians. And we don't want that for ourselves. And, you know, to do the habitual delayed gratification and sacrifice that represents the clinical life to get to your destination and to feel, this is the biggest mistake I've ever made. And my Sunday night is, good Lord, I don't know if I can do this for another 2 weeks, let alone another 20 years. And we believe that we have access to actions that can change that sentiment. And the actions that have been proven without question by us and many, many others, that deep connection to patients is restorative to the spirit and the sense of meaning and fulfillment and accomplishment of clinicians. There are now 57 studies that have demonstrated the same thing. Our connection to patients restores the soul of the clinician, any care team member. And number two, the idea of a collaborative environment of we have each other's back, we support each other, we honor each other, we respect each other, we harvest each other's ideas, we encourage each other, we coach each other, we call each other out, we speak with candor and honesty and respect, we serve a purpose bigger than any one of us, and we build this collaborative culture within our clinical microsystem, expanding across teams. And I am a part of a team that cares about each other, serving a purpose that I believe in, is restorative in every industry. And not in a subtle way, but in a profound way, and building the skills to lead effectively. We know that highly effectively led organizations where people say, my voice is heard, I'm challenged to be my best, my leaders are modeling behavior, I'm kept in the know, my ideas are tapped for solutions that I have good proximity and knowledge and awareness of, I feel honored and respected by those that I see in leadership positions. So the experience of clinicians deeply connecting with patients, highly collaborative teams, and highly effective leaders, the only way those things manifest is the application of human development to allow those things to actually happen. They don't just spontaneously happen. There's tons of literature that highly effective led organizations keep their people, engage their people, and crush it. There's lots of evidence that collaborative teams as a collaborative culture will diminish harm events, raise engagement, and keep clinical talent. There's no question. And there's lots of evidence that deep connection to patients, kindness and compassion for every patient every time, restores the soul of clinicians, in addition to growing loyalty of patients so they don't leak and bail out of your network, is a huge economic driver and a restorer of the spirit of the healer. But the future state of connect, collaborate, and lead only manifests if we develop our people across the system to do those things and take those actions in a witnessable way, not as a class, but as a continuous improvement mechanism, always getting better on the things that reflect skills of patient connection, team collaboration, and leadership effectiveness. So the byproduct is, yes, all of your reds turn green, but it's not at all why we are here. It is, I am being my best. I am proud of who I am. I love the purpose that I serve and we serve, and we are on a continuous improvement journey, mapping to something that deeply connects with why I am in this profession in the first place. And so when you say this has made an effect on me, that's the intent. And there's no question we're driving outcomes, and it's not subtle. We've now got 17 case studies that are demonstrating big time change, through the application of people development and continuous improvement.
So I'm going to jump in and ask a question. The one person that's not a physician here and, so fascinated with the work. So let me back up a little bit. So within the Baptist management system, we have a element that we use called humble inquiry. And it was developed with the work of Dr. Edgar Schein and his son Peter Schein. And it's really based on the presupposition, that especially in the Western world where we live, we do a lot of telling. I remember one time practicing humble inquiry with some physician friends of mine. And one of them said, this is much more difficult than I thought. And I said, well, please tell me more. He said, well, I've been a physician for 25 years and I've diagnosed my patients and told them what to do. And now that I'm in a leadership role, I feel the need to diagnose you and tell you what to do. You know, but that's really not humble inquiry, you know. And Ed Schein would always say that life is a series of conversations and everything happens through conversations and relationships. In your micro learnings and in the practice excellence, Dr. Beeson, how do you help people learn to have different conversations or ask different questions?
Well, I would even characterize practicing excellence as an inoculum for a conversation. And it is in the conversation where human behavioral change occurs. So I think that as we look at how do micro-learning coaching tips change human behavior and allow us to begin to do things differently, I would even contend, Skip, that the idea of, as an example, humble inquiry is profoundly applicable in the exam room. The paternalistic style of I'm going to collect your objective symptoms, create a differential, test against it, make your diagnosis and tell you what to do, doesn't work to activate patients in caring for themselves and to participate. So the idea of imagine if clinicians learn the skill of identifying really what matters most to patients and to activate them to truly partner, and we could be the Sherpa in a wellness journey, it is multiples more effective than telling people what to do, which it has been categorically defined as ineffective. And if you were to watch game film inside the exam room, we are so paternalistic, it's embarrassing. And we don't even know we're doing it. So the idea of how do we apply human development to break the cycle of something that isn't working, particularly in the context of population health, patient participatory care, and chronic disease management, which is 70% of all American healthcare. If patients are not activated and participating in care because we're still paternalistic, we're screwed in terms of our ability to advance the wellness of the populations. So this idea of this example that you provide is not only applicable to how do we create approachability and activation and safety and permission and enablement of our teams through humble inquiry? It is a transcendent skill for the exam room. And this one is so powerful, Skip. If you could imagine everybody doing just that one thing as sort of a fractal throughout the organization, we just, you know, snap our fingers somehow. And everybody begins to do that with patients and with each other. Just one skill. Say nothing about compassion or growth mindset or team intelligence or self-awareness, all the other hundreds of skills that are the substrate for continuous improvement. But imagine just that one. And so what that would do and what the downstream impact could be, might be. And so the idea of using technology to apply and distribute skills synchronously across the system with a shared evidence-based source code for this is an idea of what we might be able to do together is a very powerful learning mechanism and an accelerator to continuous improvement. And the final comment I would say on this is that learning things is not enough. We have to learn, we have to apply, and we have to debrief. We call it learn, try, share, learn, try, share, learn, try, share. Sometimes it's a derivative of see one, do one, teach one, which is how we sort of became clinicians. We learn a thing, we try a thing, and we share what happened. Learn, try, share, learn, try, share, learn, try, share, learn, try, share, learn, try, share. That's the cycle. That's the Krebs cycle of learning, right? Where we're continuously learning, trying, and debriefing. And I would say when people try a skill, for example, we learn a skill in the exam room of saying to a patient, tell me about, of all the things that you're going through right now, tell me what bothers you the most, what worries you the most, as a mechanism to really illuminate what patients are afraid of so we can map our treatment plan to something that actually matters to them. And then they begin to do that and they go, holy crap, I was worried about their A1C. They're actually worried about their ability to go up and down the bleachers of their grandson's baseball game. Wouldn't that be interesting to know? That's been a career changer for me. I wish I would have learned this 15 years ago. But then they're debriefing with their colleagues, and their colleagues are going, that's really interesting. So again, the practicing excellence coaching tips are the inoculum. The contagion is the debrief and the conversations that follow. So Skip, I love the idea of starting conversations, because all of these coaching tips are about the conversations that follow and the storytelling that emerges from the application of learning in the continuous improvement journey.
Yeah, that's great, Dr. Beeson. I actually think you kind of answered part of my next question. You know, I've only been in practice about 12 to 13 years now. And at one point, I kind of found myself in that position you had talked about, where I was wondering, is this really what I'm supposed to be doing? I was concentrating more on numbers and documentation and, you know, just making sure that I was telling the patient what they needed to be doing to become more healthy, and not really asking the questions that I needed to be asking. And, you know, kind of once I discovered practicing excellence and was able to learn how to ask the right questions in the room with the patient, I started to see the benefit from that. And so I never really saw myself on this continuous improvement journey. But now that I've experienced that myself, I want to share that with everybody. And I want to be able to show them how to get the joy out of medicine, that really the reason we all got into this profession to start with, but you just lose it somewhere along the way. So how do we reach more physicians and more APPs? How do we share this with them so that they can have this same experience?
Well, I think the most effective mechanism, Shane, is what you're doing right now. As there's either pull or push mechanisms of engagement and participation in mastering continuous improvement. In this case, the practicing excellence coaching tips, right? So a push mechanism would be, we're going to put certifications into our performance management and place incentive dollars associated with getting certified in leadership or team collaboration or patient experience or whatever programs you happen to be involved in. There's a role for things like that. But it's not our favorite, right? I mean, it's, you know, we cannot be one more thing to do. We have to be practicing excellence has helped me become who I've always wanted to be. And I kind of quite frankly forgot why I'm here and who I want to be. I mean, that's what we want the narrative to be. And usually people, even if they walk in saying, oh my God, Shane in his, you know, Pollyanna view of the world and how this has changed his life, it's irritating because I'm short-staffed, I'm exhausted, and how could a four-minute video do anything? But once we get them in, everybody's like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, I learned how to manage the patient demanding antibiotics for a viral illness. I was going to war on that one, and holy smokes, that's so much better, you know. And you can build push mechanisms, building it into performance management and providing incentives, but a pull mechanism is far greater. And a couple of examples of pull mechanisms is, you know, kicking off a meeting, looking at your use analytic engines and saying, oh my gosh, we've got some hyper users here, and having them stand up and tell their story of the impact that they created and what they felt and what they experienced and saying, could you tell your story? And clinician to clinician invitation of, I was skeptical, I was cynical going in, but I learned a skill and I tried a skill and I have hope for the future now. And that's a pull mechanism. So there's pull and there's push. Our client success team is really good at navigating how it is that we create the right composite of those levers. And also recognizing and celebrating people that you see doing and participating, you know, recognition and storytelling of victory and taking action is far more likely to replicate that behavior. And so recognition, certifications, storytelling, all of those things collectively, we can get very, very high levels of engagement in the process. And many of our partners have literally 100% of their clinicians participating. You can't get 100% of clinicians to do anything ever. So, but it's about storytelling and the ability to create both pull and push mechanisms.
All right, let me ask a question. Let me frame it up, though. You know, for your entire physician life, both of you, and way before you ever showed up on the scene, you know, physicians go through a cycle. Now, in the improvement world, we call it plan, do, study, adjust. You may call it diagnose. Then you provide some kind of service, some kind of surgery, some kind of medicine, and then you follow up as a good doctor, and you learn that you have to make adjustments to that medication, that therapy, and you've been doing. You may go through that multiple times, and that's just that iterative process, you know. And in the Baptist management system, we strongly embrace that, and it sounds like this: you're going to do something. I'm expecting something to happen as a result of what you do. Can you be specific in what you think is going to happen? And many times something different happens, and then you learn something, meaning if you had to do it all over again, what would you do different? And so then you pivot again. As a physician or a nurse or someone's engaging practice excellence, and there's these micro learnings, knowledge is one thing. Knowledge is good. I always use my daughter when I was training her how to drive, and I did choose the word training there specifically. You know, she had knowledge. She went down and aced a driving test for the state of Arkansas. But when I put her into a car, she said, "Dad, which one's the brake and which one's the gas pedal?" She had no skill, even though she had knowledge to pass an academic test. As a physician is engaging in practicing excellence, Dr. Beeson, how does that skill get developed? Because we know that skill does get developed through failure, and failure is a positive thing if we'll learn to embrace that. How does that play out when rubber hits the road?
So it's a great question. And, you know, we say again and again and again and again that there must be a transition from learning a skill to applying a skill. And during the skill application, there's a careful observation of what happened as a result. It may be just what you expect, but that almost never happens. And so that process of learn, try, reflect, what happened as a result, and how will I do it differently based upon what I'm seeing in front of me. The other thing, the context that is critical for that we even consider to be a precursor to the application of a learn, try, share cycle is insight and self-awareness. So in the absence of, I won't even coach a clinician in a continuous improvement cycle unless there's openness to self-reflect honestly as to the result of the action that I took. And it is a requirement, a dependency. Self-awareness is a dependency to engage a cycle of continuous improvement. And so we work on self-awareness. So when a clinician says, there's something that I'm doing with patients that are prompting patients to feel what they feel when they are with me, I don't know what it is, but there's something. Versus the clinician who says, I listen, I express compassion, I explain care perfectly every time. They tell me all the time. And there's no willingness or receptiveness to try a skill based upon how they see themselves. If they don't have insight and self-awareness, the ability to apply continuous improvement is truncated almost entirely. So we often work as a precursor to that cycle to make sure that we turn the dials of self-awareness and insight, which is highly correlated with emotional intelligence, which is also subject to human development. We can develop emotional intelligence to allow us to go through the continuous improvement cycle far more effectively and far more efficiently.
Well, that is fantastic, Dr. Beeson. That was really, really good. I know Baptist Memorial Healthcare is heavily involved with practicing excellence. We feel honored and thrilled. And I get very excited as an improvement practitioner. The thing that kept coming to my mind as you were talking today was a former guest that we had on, Michael Bungay Stainer, is famous for writing a book called The Coaching Habit. And he talked about, can you just be curious just a little bit longer? And I kept thinking about that as you were talking about this conversation that we want to learn how to have. And truly, we do have to learn how to have it, right? And so, Dr. Beeson, I cannot tell you how incredibly grateful I am for you. I love that you came and visited us a couple weeks back here at Baptist. I love the work you're doing with our physicians like Dr. Lyerly and others. And just on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare, we are so incredibly grateful for you, the great work you and your team are doing. And I hope that you'll consider maybe coming back on the podcast in the near future. But just wanted to say a hearty thank you.
Well, I appreciate you. And, you know, healthcare has a lot of work yet to do. I believe that we have dominion over a lot in terms of the outcomes that we can create, and developing us to become our best is one of the greatest untapped opportunities in all of healthcare and probably in every industry. And it's how we become better. So I'm grateful to be partnered with Baptist, and had a great time out there, and had some great camaraderie and drinks with your team, and develop some new friendships. So it's been awesome.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Beeson, for being here. It's so good to see you again. And it was such an honor to have you and be able to be here and visit with you again. Thank you for all you do. And we look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.